finals this weekend. The sermon series entitled Fear Not takes on a different meaning for them as they head into the last couple of days of class. But for the rest of us, this fear not is a command that we see over and over throughout the Christmas story. Over and over as we read through, these different things keep coming up. Fear not. And it seems strange to me, strange to a few of you others that I've talked to, that a holiday that we associate with joy and cheerfulness and hope feels so very different for the people that were actually there. See, we talk about hope and joy and those type of things, and that makes sense to us in Christmas whenever we tie it to things like the Christmas tree and the presents and all the movies that we see. But on the ground level, it feels very different than it does from the high-rise view. You see, the term fear not keeps coming up in the Christmas story because the real story is a lot different than the story that we see from way up above. Anybody in here, if you fly very much, I fly just enough to where I enjoy it. If I flew too much, I could see how this would be an awful thing, and you'd just be over it, you'd be done with it, this is too much. But if you fly just a little bit like I do once every couple of years, then you kind of enjoy it. And what you notice when you fly, when you get up in the air, is that things look very different than they do on the ground level. From high above, you see organization and patterns, and everything seems like it moves so smooth. When you see the interstate and just a line of cars, it just looks like it's a line of cars and everything is moving smoothly, or even if it's moving slowly, it's organized in a way that seems to make a lot of sense. And I love sitting in the window seat of a plane so you can look out and you can see these different things and the patterns of life. But as you begin your descent and the lights start to get a little bit bigger, cars become a little bit clearer, buildings start to take shape. What you see is that what was once this kind of massive light without a whole lot of substance, just some general organization, begins to take shape. And then as the plane goes lower and lower, you start to see how traffic changes from this stretch of lights to now really kind of individual cars. And you can kind of start to see as you're going down, kind of heading to land, you can see what was once this beautiful just string of lights like lights on a Christmas tree as they're laid out, now become these individual things, and cars are darting back and forth and they're turning here and they're cutting people off here. And what was this organized sense of peace as you get closer to the ground level is really kind of controlled chaos. You see, the difference as you get closer to the ground level is what felt like a really good thing way up high and felt like a really smooth, peaceful thing is really nothing like that. That's kind of the way the Christmas story works. When you drive by and you see the manger scene, what you think is, oh yeah, that's pretty. I know what that's there for. That's nice. That's a nice looking manger scene. And then you see the lights on the houses and you see the tree lit up and everything looks great. But the reality of that manger scene is so messy. The reality of that manger scene is not pretty at all. It's not sentimental. It's not any of those things. It's a cliche for us to see it in somebody's front yard, to see it up on our mantle, to see it with our Fisher-Price toys that are down there so our kids can destroy things and we're not worried about it. Like, that makes sense for us to have those things right there, and it just seems really simple and like, yeah, this is the way that it's supposed to be. But can I just tell you, in my life, the reality of seeing a child born in a stable and having three kings or wise men come to worship him, like that doesn't compute with me. That doesn't make any sense when you look at the reality of Christmas. And sometimes the idea is very different than the reality. And so what we're doing whenever we look at this series, Fear Not, is we're looking at the reality of what these people were feeling, the reality of what they were dealing with. For some of you guys, the idea of your life is great. The idea of what you have is good. Maybe you're healthy, maybe you've got a family and kids, maybe you don't have any of those things, but you can look at your life and you can say, everything should be okay, I should be pretty happy, I'm really blessed with a lot of things, but the reality of your life is that it's really hard. And that you have a lot of questions. And that maybe like Zechariah last week, you're worried that God has forgotten you. Or maybe like Mary this week, you're worried about where God is sending you. the reality of our lives is very different when you look at the ground level. The Facebook picture that we give, the Instagram picture that we give is really, really pretty. But the reality is a little bit different. And so these emotions, that this emotion of fear is one that I can grasp and one that I can understand. And so I want to latch on to that in the Christmas story. The grittiness. Last week we saw Zechariah, this priest who would be the father of John the Baptist. A man who had every reason to believe that God had forgotten him and forgotten his people. But this angel tells him he has nothing to fear at all. That God has heard his prayer. It's a beautiful story to say, it may look dismal, but God has not forgotten. Don't fear that he has left you. Today we're going to look at the story of Mary. I think we've talked about Mary every Christmas since I've been a pastor here. It's kind of hard not to talk about her. She's kind of central to the story. But we can look at her part, I hope, in a little bit of a different perspective, or maybe we're going to repeat some of the things that we've said in the past. But I think that it's really important that we don't just walk by this. So let's read in Luke chapter 1, verse 26. We're going to read this story of Mary and see what it is that happens and what it is that is told. So I'm going to read the whole story and then I'll go back and kind of pick apart pieces of it. Luke chapter 1 verse 26. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent from God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph, to the house of David. And the virgin's name was Mary. And he came to her and he said, "Greetings, O favored one, the Lord is with you." All's going pretty good so far. This sounds like a good greeting, right? This is something you want to have an angel come say to you. "Greetings, the Lord is with you." If that's how your morning starts, you're going to have a good day, is what you're thinking, right? So, "Greetings, the Lord is with you." But she was greatly troubled at the saying. Well, that's not what I expected that verse to say, right? I don't expect it to say she was greatly troubled at the saying. I expect it to say she was really excited at what the angel had to say. But not Mary. She was troubled at the saying, and tried to discern what sort of greeting this might be. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus. And he will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. And the Lord will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. And his kingdom there will be no end." And Mary said to the angel, "How will this be, since I am a virgin?" And the angel answered her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. And therefore the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God. And behold, your relative in her old age has also conceived a son. And this is the sixth month with her who was called barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. It's an amazing story. The reaction, what she's told is going to happen, all that's ties in here, it's an amazing story. Mary, much like Zechariah, is initially completely taken aback by the moment. Like, what in the world is going on here? What are you telling me? The angel shows up and her first reaction is just to be completely confused. The angel's standing in front of her, suddenly saying these things, and she's like, "Hang on just a second. I don't know you, and I don't know what you're telling me, but it doesn't make any sense. Hang on just a sec. What is going on here?" But unlike Zechariah, her fear wasn't based in disbelief. It was based in something else. Again, her reaction is odd. When the angel shows up and says, "Greetings, God has great things for you. Greetings, God has looked at you and you're favored by God." That doesn't sound like something that should scare her. But clearly she's afraid, because the next thing the angel has to say is, "Don't be afraid." And so she's nervous when this angel shows up. I mean, what about that scares you? If God shows up and says, this is the way it is, what about that scares you? If God shows up and or an angel shows up and says, "Don't worry, God's on your side," then I'm thinking one of three things is about to happen based off of everything that I see on TV and everything that the culture tells me. One of three things is about to happen. I'm about to win some type of fight, I'm about to win some type of sporting event, or I'm about to get rich. One of those three things is going to happen, because that's what it means to have favor with God in our culture, right? The only time that we say, thank God, thank you for the, I'm just blessed the way that God has taken care of me, that's after somebody just scored a touchdown, right? That's after somebody just won a game at the end, or it's after somebody has made money, won an award. Something like that has happened. Something that the rest of the world will look at and say, that's a good thing that that happened. That's what it means to be blessed and to be favored. And so if an angel shows up and says, you're favored by God, I'm thinking, all right, this is good. This is good news. I'm about to have some money, or something really good is about to happen where people are going to recognize the goodness that I bring. But when the angel shows up and tells Mary that God has found favor in her, her first response is to be massively confused and a little bit worried. Why would you find favor with me? Who am I? What did I do to deserve this? What does that even mean that God has found favor with me? It seems as though maybe Mary had a little bit more perspective on what it means to find favor with God than we do. It seems as though her initial response is not, oh, this means great things for me. It's, oh, hang on just a second, what does this mean for me? Listen, I was told pretty much my entire life, growing up in church, I was told that there's no safer place to be than the center of God's will. You heard that before? There's no safer place to be than the center of God's will. There's no happier place to be than the center of God's will. That as long as I was in the center of God's will, I'd find everything I had ever wanted. A career I love, a family that loved me, safety, security would abound, and I would have a solid bank account. All would be well. I've heard some version of that my entire life, either implicitly or explicitly said to me, as long as you're in the center of God's will be well. But as I read this Christmas story, I'm not so sure we can come anywhere close to making any of those claims. I'm not even sure what the center of God's will is. God's will is God's will. What the center is, or just like slightly off center, I'm not really sure. But if you're in God's will, Mary seemed to know that when God came calling, there would be some measure of devotion, some measure of commitment, some measure of sacrifice that would need to follow. There's a song that I love by a guy named Andrew Peterson that was written for his son as he was growing older. It's called You'll Find Your Way, and there's a line in that song that says, and I know you'll be scared when you take up that cross, and I know it'll hurt because I know what it costs. And that song always resonates with me. Because I know whenever you take up your cross to follow Christ, there's pain in that. Mary seemed to know whenever this angel showed up that when God says he's got a plan for you, that doesn't mean all will go well. It means God's got a plan for you. And a lot of different things could happen. And so Mary's a little bit nervous. I wonder how many of us think about God's blessing that way, for ourselves, for our kids. We rejoice when we see someone follow Christ, and absolutely we should. But I wonder how much we think about how much it'll hurt and how much it will cost. If we did, it might just make a little bit of sense for us to be afraid, with maybe a couple of caveats that we'll see here in just a second. You see, God doesn't want us to respond in fear whenever it's talking about following him, at least not fear in a way that makes us cower away. And this is why the angel says, don't be afraid, Mary, fear not. And this is my first point of the morning. Don't fear what you don't know. Don't fear what you don't know. Mary had no idea what the angel was about to say to her. She had no clue. She did not know what was getting ready to come. She nobody had heard from God in hundreds of years. She didn't know what this angel was about to tell her. She had no idea the plan that God had or the role that she would play. She was just nervous. About what? We don't know. I'm not sure that she knew. But she was nervous. God showed up. He said, the angel said, you have found favor with God. God's going to do something. And she's like, hang on just a second. That scares me. That's a natural reaction. I get that reaction. I understand that reaction. She was nervous, and about what, we don't know, and neither did Mary. I wonder, do you ever get that way? Do you ever just feel afraid going through life? You feel nervous. You're not really sure what you're afraid of, but you're definitely afraid. You're not really sure what you're worried about, but you're definitely worried. You're not really sure what makes you nervous, but you're definitely nervous. I wonder how many of you live life that way. And then when something comes along, you're like, that's it. That's what I was nervous about. I didn't know that's what I was nervous about 5 minutes ago, but now that I've seen that, that's it. That's what I was nervous about. Far too often, we can feel like God is calling us to do something, and we can create this long list of things that make us nervous and why we can't do it. The what ifs of following God's will. You know this conversation well, right? I'm going to assume I'm not the only one that knows it well, because I think I have it pretty regularly with God. You maybe feel like God is calling you to do something, calling you to give something up, calling you to go in a direction, to take a step down a path that you don't know very well. You don't know where that path ends up. You're like, well, hang on just a second, God. What if, fill in the blank. Maybe God's calling you to be generous with your money this season. But you're worried, well, hang on just a second. What if there's car trouble? What if the roof starts to leak? What if something happens and I'm not there to go that direction or to prepare this or to do this? What if, God? And you're afraid of the unknown. God, I can't quit my job right now. I can't start a new job right now. I can't start working from home right now. I can't just stay at home and take care of them. I can't do this and I can't do that, because what if I can't? I'm afraid, God. I can't. What if? I can't talk to my friend about Jesus. I mean, we live in Tennessee. That she knows about Jesus, right? We live in Tennessee. Everybody knows about Jesus. So there's no need for me to say anything. I know she doesn't go to church. I know she doesn't live like a Christian, but I can't say anything to her about Jesus. What if she gets mad? What if she gets offended? What if she never talks to me? What if? And the conversation goes on and on and on. I can't give my life to Christ. I can't give everything over to Him. What if He asked me to do something that terrifies me? What if He asked me to be a missionary someplace? What if he, you know, asked me to confess how truly bad I am to someone? I can't do that. I can't tell people about this stuff. I can't tell people how selfish I am. I can't tell people how greedy I am. I can't tell people about my lustful thoughts, my selfishness, my arrogance, my greed, my pettiness, my anger. I can't tell people about that stuff. What are they going to think? What if they really knew who I was? I can't take that risk, God. And on and on and on it goes. I can't parent that way. I can't love my wife that way. I can't give this. I can't serve that way. Mary understands that conversation well. So many times we want to know the outcome before we begin the first step of obedience. So many times we want to see the end of obedience before we see the beginning of obedience. That's not how this works. That's not how God works when He comes to us and when He calls to us. God says, don't fear, I'm here and I'll be with you every step of the way. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Don't worry about the outcome right now. You worry about the first step or the next step. That's the only step that you need to worry about. Listen to me here. You don't need to know the outcome to pursue obedience. You don't need to know the end of the journey to begin the journey. The outcome is His. The obedience is yours. You don't have to understand immediately or completely in order to obey immediately and completely. If you spend life living in the unknown, living your life in the what ifs and the questions, then you'll spend your life paralyzed by fear, missing opportunities that God has for you, missing the invitation that God has put before you. Do you see that here with Mary? Do you see what's before her? It would be easy for Mary to see what God's doing here as a massive interruption to her life. She's got a man, a good family, her life's heading in a pretty secure direction. All was going pretty well for Mary. But God's got other plans, and she's about to learn what those are. And as we'll see, Mary chooses to take this moment not as an interruption to her plan, but as an invitation to God's plan. I just wonder, how often have you missed out on something God wanted to do in your life or in someone else's life because you saw God's invitation as an interruption? And you said, no, I'm about my plan, not about yours. I've got this going on. I don't need you to step in, God, and interrupt me right now. And God's saying, this is not an interruption. I'm inviting you to be a part of something bigger than yourself. Obedience doesn't require that you know everything. It just requires that you take the next step. That's what God is calling us to. Don't let what you don't know hurt you. Second point this morning is don't fear what you do know. The first one is don't fear what you don't know. The second one is don't fear what you do know. Mary may not have known exactly what was going to happen when this angel showed up and delivered this message. Mary may not have known all the details, but there's all kinds of things she could have imagined that it was going to go, but there were certainly some things that she did know for sure. When this angel reads this message to her and says, this is how this is going to happen. You're going to be pregnant. You're going to have a son. And we're going to go in this direction. This is who this son is going to be. He's going to be Jesus. He's going to be the Son of God. She knew in that moment there were certain things she could not avoid. Now, there's certain things she didn't know how they were going to play out, but there's some she knew exactly what was going to happen. She was going to be pregnant. She was going to be pregnant in a way she could not explain to anybody that they were going to believe. She was going to have to tell her fiancé. She was going to have to tell some of her relatives. She was, by all rights, going to be divorced and alone. Based on everything she knew was about to happen, fear was more than a little justified here for Mary. She knew her life was going to change. She knew her plans that she had were no longer valid. She knew life had forever changed for her. Listen, sometimes God calls us to do things and we don't know what the outcome will be. But sometimes He calls us to do things and we know exactly what the outcome will be. There is no question. Maybe you need to confess something to a spouse. Maybe you need to confess something to an employer. Maybe you need to confront something in your kids or in your family or in your own life. Maybe there's something going on where you need to step forward and you know what it's going to cost you if you take that step. Not what it might, like you know this will happen if I do this. If I stand up for this in this place, I'm going to be ostracized in this way. You know that's going to happen. If you give generously, then that means there's going to be money that's not going to be in your account. Like, you know that's going to happen. If you love your spouse selflessly, even though they may not return that for you, if you love your spouse selflessly, that's going to expose you in a way where your heart could be trampled. Maybe if you're a student, you refuse to cheat on an exam that you know you're going to fail if you don't find some answer somewhere. Like you know, but you make this choice and say, I'm going to stay here because this is where God has called me to do. I'm not going to go down this road, even though I know what it's going to cost. Maybe you need to choose a different career path, even though you know financially or status-wise it's going to cost you. Sometimes God calls us to do things that will hurt. And we need to be prepared for that moment when it comes. Don't fear what you don't know, but don't fear what you do know. Just because it's hurt, it hurts. Just because it makes you uncomfortable. Just because it's going to wreck the plan that you had for your life, that you had built, doesn't mean that you have to go into that terrified or reluctantly. It doesn't mean that you have to kind of hedge your bets and keep all options open. That's how I typically work with God. That's my pattern. I don't know how it works for you. Some of you guys are like, God tells me to do whatever. Here I am, send me, and there you go. And you're, you know, all fear abandoned and all is well. Others of you, God calls you to do something. And you're like, no thanks, not going to do it. And you're going to have to end up in a fish somewhere before you end up doing what God has called you to do. The way it typically works for me is God will say, here, go do this. And I'll be like, hang on, let me cover my bases. And then I think I'll probably maybe do that. That's how it typically works for me, right? Like maybe, yeah, but just in case, I want a backup plan. I want a fallback. Let me go do this. Let me take care of this part of my education. Let me take care of this and do this here. Let me make sure I've got this money safe before I give this money here. Like that's how it works for me. But that's not the kind of life God has called us to. He's called us to give all to Him, to give every step of faith to Him, to move in that direction everywhere that we go, and to trust Him in all of it. And it doesn't have to be terrified, reluctantly, or covering our bases. It gives God tremendous glory when you look at what you're going to lose in order to follow Him and to say, you're worth it, let's do this. When you look at God and He says, if you follow me, which I'm telling you to do, you're going to lose this, and you say, that's fine, then I'll lose it, but I'm not going to turn my back on you, God. I'm going to stay faithful. I'm going to be obedient. God is glorified when you do that. And we'll look at the way Mary embraces this moment, this invitation that she has. Much as we saw with Zechariah last week. Eventually, it took 9 months for Zechariah to come around, but he eventually came around, and he praised God with his song, his Benedictus. And now we're going to look at Mary's Magnificat, where she embraces God. She sings a song and says, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what this is going to mean, but I'm going to trust you, God. And she embraces the plan that God has. Her initial reaction is that she's reluctant. But then she embraces it. She doesn't say, okay, God, if I have to, I'll do it. Like, that would be kind of my reaction. If I have to, I'll do it. I don't want to like it. You know, it's like telling my kids to, you know, do their chores. Fine, I'll do it because I don't want to get in trouble, but I don't have to like it. And so they just whine the whole time. Or they just pretend that it makes their life awful. You know, like, I'll do it if that makes you happy, but that's not what I want to do. But that doesn't have to be our response to God. And let's be clear. God's plan for Mary was not one that she would have signed up for. For Mary, it meant heartache and persecution. It meant loneliness and confusion. If her life had gone the way she thought it was going to go, if her and Joseph had gotten married, and they had their kids, and they had just lived the life that they were supposed to live as a normal couple in Israel, her life would have been easier. It would have been easier. This whole stuff about being in the center of God's will is the only safe place to be and the only happy place to be. I mean, maybe some of that's true on some level. If you want to like really start moralizing and spiritualizing it, maybe some of that's true. But just on a practical level, it would have been easier if she was doing something on her own. If she hadn't followed what God had said. Just on a practical level, her life would have been easier. The life she lived was a hard life. It's not what we always think of whenever we think about following God's will. Sometimes it works out where life is hard. That's okay. Mary can embrace the knowns and the unknowns that come with following God. But the only way that she could do that is because her eyes were not primarily upon her. In this moment, what mattered most was not her, it was not Joseph, it was God. Let's read her song, and I want you to notice, she talks about herself in here, but I want you to notice who she's singing about. And how she can embrace the fear that God, or the plan that God has called to her, even when she was afraid. Luke chapter 1, verse 46. And Mary said, my soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he has looked on the humble estate of his servant, for behold, from now on all generations will call me blessed. For he who is mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the mighty from their homes and exalted those of humble estate. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his offspring forever. So long as your focus is on you, so long as the song that you sing is about you, you will be gripped by fear by what you know and what you don't. So long as your eyes are on you, and you're worried about how things are going to work out for you, you will not be able to take the angel's advice of don't be afraid. Because you'll always be able to come back with, yeah, but, and what if. But when your eyes are on God, when what you value most is Him and His glory and His plan, then that's when you can have the kind of faith like Paul has that says, to live is Christ and to die is gain. I don't have to worry about what my future is because I know where my hope is, and it is in Christ. And so that's how fear can be eliminated in your life. Now, that emotion's always going to be there. But you don't have to be paralyzed by it. But the only way that you can move past that is when you switch your focus. If Mary's focus is on Mary, she's not going to make it. But her focus is on something else. Her focus is on God's people. And her focus is on God. And so she celebrates and says, God has blessed me, and he's blessed me because I get to be a part of this bigger thing that God is doing in the people of Israel and in my life. Not because I'm something great and God's going to give me something good and make something great out of me, but because God is going to make his name great and he's going to use me to do it. If that's your goal, that God would use you to make his name great, then you don't have to be afraid. If your goal is that God is going to make your name great, then you should be terrified. Because he will not allow that to happen. Not be greater than his. So where are you at this morning? Where do you find your hope? Where do you find your joy? Where do you find your direction? When you wake up in the morning, whose name are you trying to make great? If your name, the name you're trying to make great is God's, then you can hear the angel say to you, fear not. Fear not. That's the call that we have this morning. That's the call of Christmas. God's name is made great, and we get to be a part of it. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you this morning that your plans are greater than ours. That when you come to us, Father, I ask that you would direct our eyes, direct our gaze, direct our sight so that we're not constantly with our eyes on ourselves and our eyes on our own situation and our eyes on who we are and what we need. But instead that our eyes would be on you. That we would follow you in faith. We wouldn't be afraid whenever you say, your plans are done, because I have a bigger plan for you. And instead, we would say, we are blessed for we have found favor with God. May that be true of our hearts this morning. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.